Okay, your 5-year apprentice you set up then, Brian. What happened next? Was it national service or what?
Yes, at the end of my apprenticeship at the age of 21, I had to serve 2 years national service in the RAF. Luckily, I was put on a 16-week course for the servicing of aircraft, which taught me a great deal about different branches of electrical engineering. I spent about 18 months on a station in Kent, working on various types of meteor jet fighters, but mostly on the NF-11 and NF-12 versions.
Right. So that took you over a couple of years. Then, presuming you worked to you returned to fielding in Platt then, Brian, what position did you take up then?
After leaving the RAF in June 1955, I returned to Fielding and Platt as a fully trained electrician. In early 1956, there was a great expansion of the drawing office staff, and I moved to the electrical drawing office in February 1956. At a salary of £12 per week, and worked under Bob Poole, who was the electrical engineer, and John Tranter, who was the electrical draftsman.
Okay. So that went on, obviously, for a few years. And then did any promotions come along the way, Brian?
Well, sadly, Bob Poole died in late 1956 and was replaced by Ken Hudson from Heenan and Froude at Worcester. During the next decade, there was a great expansion in the electrical drawing office, and numbers increased to about 10 people, one being an electronic specialist, Peter Salter. Many new control systems were required for process measurement and control on our products. Some of these were developed by Peter Salter. At the end of 1960s, Ken Hudson moved to Australia, where he'd met his wife during the latter end of World War II. At this time, I was promoted to Chief Electrical Engineer. In the early 1970s, more changes took place in the machine tool control, with the advent of solid-state static switching, replacing many control relays. Towards the end of that decade, programmable controllers became available and made it possible to considerably reduce the miles of wiring previously used on control systems. Eventually, the industrial version of computers became available during the 1980s and 1990s.
Okay, obviously this is getting a lot more complex. Did you have to have any training at all, Brian, or did you sort of have to pick things up as you went along, which is very often the case?
No, when the new equipment came along, we did go on various courses, and in particular, I went on a 6-month, one-day-a-week course to the Heenan and Froude factory in Worcester, where they had a large electronic training school.
So obviously you worked on a lot of different machines. Is there any particular one that you thought might have been perhaps more interesting than others, or was it a similar work content irrespective of the machine tool?
Well, each machine tended to be different from a control system point of view, if only because of what the particular customer wanted. But interesting ones were an automatic machine for making the end caps on starter motors on cars. That was for the Lucas company in Birmingham.
Okay. I would imagine what you talked about so far actually took place at Fielding and Platt. But what about when the machine tool, the press or whatever it was, went away to be erected at site? So that would mean obviously you would have to travel. Did you do much travelling?
Yes, all these changes in the control systems produced the need for electrical people to spend more time on site, especially abroad. This required further increase in staff in the electrical drawing office. Whilst normally I was based in Gloucester, I did travel to various sites such as Serbia for 57 days, Switzerland for 90 days, Canada for 21 days, America for 50 days, and Australia for 28 days. All these visits were required air travel, but sometimes long distances by road. The visit to Serbia involved an 11-hour trip by bus, which appeared to stop at every small village, picking up or dropping off people and goods. It was not unusual to have crates of chickens, ducks, and perhaps piglets stored in the gangway for the next 10 miles or so.
What a wonderful experience. And you were paid at the same time. How interesting. that was an interesting experience. Is there any particular other interesting experiences that you can recall at this time?
No, there was something always different on all the visits, but it was interesting to come in contact with the local people who were working at the factory rather than meeting people as though if you went there on holiday.
And did you have to stay on site until the machine was working correctly, and then did it have to be signed off?
Yes, in many cases this is what took the time, because there were always minor changes to suit the customer's requirement, and usually I was there almost to the end of the contract.
Okay. Travelling into various countries, did you ever have any trouble with customs people? You were an Englishman going into a foreign country. Did there ever any problems?
Not that I remember, because most of the time it was the company's engineers that we were visiting, for instance in Serbia, spoke reasonable English.
So you didn't have to take an interpreter with you very often then?
No, although in Serbia we did take the trouble to have vocabulary books which gave us the interpretation of various words, but some of them were not very technical, so it wasn't a lot of help.
Okay. I would tether a horse probably when you don't really need anything like that.